All right, on to Decision Gate 2020. Where will Tom Brady play next season? You'd assume that when you dedicate 20 years to a team, win them 6 Super Bowls, and take the hometown discount along the way, you'd have the liberty to weigh your options in the offseason. Well, you would be assuming wrong. Speculation is that the Patriots will not wait until the March 16th deadline for Brady's decision. Nick, should the Pats already be planning for a new quarterback next year?
Well, they seem to already be, you know, planning for the contingency. And, Jenna, I think you got it exactly right. Just add this to the pile, the mounting pile of disrespect shown to the greatest quarterback ever. People say I'm disrespectful to Tom Brady because I said he wasn't any good this year. But for, I have no ties to Tom Brady's done nothing for me. Tom Brady hasn't brought me championships, hasn't taken discounts to work for me, hasn't been the consummate teammate and pro with me. I've just enjoyed watching him play football until around Super Bowl 4 got a little irritating. Like, enough winning, Tom. Come on. But except that the Patriots have been more disrespectful to Brady over the last 8 months, 9 months than I can ever remember a team being to one of their all-time greats who has been nothing but great to them. And it's noteworthy where this is coming from. Adam Schefter is one of the best in the world at what he does. But Adam Schefter also came up in Boston, has a lot of ties and I think still lingering relationships with the Patriots organization. So if he has informed speculation on this, I have informed speculation on where that's coming from. And the fact that the Patriots are trying to rush Tom Brady into this decision, the first time he's ever a free agent, basically saying, we need you to make your decision before free agency begins, when the only thing he got out of him this last contract negotiation was the opportunity to actually be a free agent. If I'm Tom, that's infuriating. Utterly infuriating that I asked to come back, I asked for a contract extension, you wouldn't give it to me. The one thing you gave me was freedom of movement this offseason, and now we're not even to the Super Bowl, and there's feelers being put out there that clock's ticking, better make my decision, better figure this out. That would bother me immensely if I were Tom or anyone close to him.
Well, I'm sure it bothers him. He's infuriated and he feels disrespected. But the one thing that he can also say is this is not something that he didn't expect. Because this is how Bill Belichick has done business with all of the star players that have come through the Patriots during their dynastic run over the last couple of decades. Whether it's Richard Seymour, whether it's Vince Wilfork, it doesn't matter who it is. I mean, Bill Belichick usually moves on from you a year early as opposed to a year late. And you saw that a couple of years ago, Bill Belichick wanted to rip the Band-Aid off then and move on from Tom Brady and extend Jimmy Garoppolo and keep the dynasty pushing. But he wasn't afforded that luxury because Robert Kraft stepped in and superseded Belichick's authority. So it was a situation where the owner forced Bill Belichick's hand in terms of making sure that Tom Brady was going to remain the starting quarterback. I don't think it's happenstance that we're getting this information a day after we saw the clip from Robert Kraft on TMZ saying that he wants Tom Brady to be the quarterback in 2020 and beyond. So I think it's interesting, this whole dynamic and how this thing is going to play out. Ultimately, what the owner wants is probably what's going to end up happening. But I think there's going to have to be some give and take on both sides, with Bill Belichick probably paying Tom Brady a little more than Belichick would like to, but Tom Brady also accepting a little less than another team could give him on the open market.
But also, Nick, the Patriots just went through this when they waited perhaps a little too long to hear what Gronk was going to do with his decision, perhaps, you know, make it a little difficult for them to grab a tight end in the draft or trade for someone, and you saw what a void that left on their team. Perhaps they don't want to make the mistake that they made with Gronk, with Tom Brady, especially since they do need that quarterback position filled and filled
no,
well.
No, I understand why, if we remove the proper nouns from it and we just go position, quarterback position unsettled, want quarterback position settled as early as possible, of course that makes logical sense. But March 16th is well before the NFL draft. March 16th is the opening of the basic legal tampering period in the NFL. It's the very open of free agency. What if they need Brady to make a decision before then? What they are saying is, we need you to make your decision if you're coming here before any other team legally is allowed to even talk to you. We need you to choose this option before you know what your full breadth of options are. It's an outrageous request. And I understand the point, and a lot of, and you've made it before, and I think it's a smart one. We saw it happen with Richard Seymour. We saw it happen with Lawyer Malloy like a week before his season started, and the Bills ended up scooping him up. With respect to those players, ain't none of them Tom Brady. And so I would have thought he had, and I bet he would have thought, okay, I've graduated past the Patriot way, at least to a degree, and you're right that the owner will get what the owner wants, but I do wonder if Belichick is hard and fast in his belief on this, Canty, and if Belichick might also himself put the owner to a decision, which is, if you meddle in this again, you are choosing Brady over me. That it will be the fracturing moment in our relationship. And while you might believe, like Tom does, he's got 3 years left, how many years do you think I got left? How many years do you think I have left as the best coach in football? And then Robert Kraft is in a bit of a bind because moving forward, Belichick's the more valuable piece because coaching doesn't age, obviously, the way quarterbacking does. TurboTax is here to help this tax season by making tax filing easier for you. They've made it their mission to give you all the tools and advice you need to get your taxes done with confidence, like making uploading your W-2 as easy as taking a picture. Just use your phone or tablet to simply snap a picture of your W-2, then watch your information appear in the right place in your tax return. You can be sure you're filing your taxes correctly while at the same time making sure you're getting the best possible refund. TurboTax, all people are tax people.
So the Lakers won again last night, beating Brooklyn. LeBron James picking up his 10th triple-double of the season in the process, as the Lakers are sitting pretty in first place out west. But the NBA trade deadline is quickly approaching, so as expected, LeBron was asked if the Lakers are one piece away from a championship team.
We have enough right now, but it's not about, you know, competing and worrying about June. It's about worrying about January. And if we continue to get better throughout January and then we move on to February and continue to get better, we're a really good team, but we're not a great team yet. And we shouldn't be. We're just now being put together in September. And from September to now, we're a better team. And if we continue this trend, then we'll put ourselves in a position where we can compete for a championship and have a chance. And in this league and in sports in general, all you want is a chance.
Kenny, is LeBron right that the Lakers have enough right now to win a championship?
I think they have enough, but I think LeBron was trying to make the point that they need to be process-oriented, not focusing on the end goal, but focusing on incremental improvement throughout the season. You're either getting better or you're getting worse. And so I look at this Lakers team. I mean, LeBron is having an outstanding year. In terms of him being able to distribute the basketball, it's a career year for him. And then Anthony Davis, I mean, Nick, you were talking about it. This guy has been playing like he's going to be defensive player of the year. So, I mean, from your superstars, you're getting what it takes to be able to compete at the highest levels. But I think you're looking at the supporting cast and seeing the other guys come along, in particular Kyle Kuzma. And I think that's the piece of this equation that has yet to come around. The Lakers have been looking for a third scoring option, and he just has not developed into that guy. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with him as the trade deadline approaches. But in terms of where the Lakers are at right now, they're 5 games in the win column ahead of Utah and the next closest team. So I think that they've given themselves enough cushion in terms of being able to set this thing up where you can give your star players, LeBron James and Anthony Davis, a little bit of rest once it gets time to gear up for the postseason. I think that's going to be important considering those players' age.
100%, and they're doing it the right way and the smart way, which is you're taking the regular season seriously. Not so seriously that if a guy's got an injury, you don't give him the night off, you make him play through it, but to where you can get the rest when it's most valuable, when it's closest to the postseason, and you might also get a little extra rest within the postseason because you're the one seed, you sweep out the 8 seed, and you get a week off while these other teams are battling amongst each other. Your point on Kuzma is an important one, and I want to address that in a moment. But first, I want to remind the audience what a massive departure this is from things we've heard from LeBron in the past. LeBron famously, one year in Cleveland, said publicly, "We need a bleeping playmaker right before the deadline," meaning we need another ball handler. He, if you remember, after the Kyrie trade and then during the season, they remade that entire team, bringing in Jordan Clarkson, George Hill, all those guys. He, after the first game with that new team, right in February, he came off the court screaming, "We got a bleeping squad now. We finally have a bleeping squad." Meaning, and he had made it very clear, he thought the team needed to tweak things. He's right that this is, for the first time really, you could argue since the second or third year in Miami, they have a fully formed championship-level roster as is. Mm-hmm. In the playoffs, you're going to go eight deep. LeBron, Danny Green, KCP, Anthony Davis, center of your choosing, Dwight or JaVale, pick one of them, mm-hmm. with a bench of Caruso, Kuzma, Bradley. There's your eight. That is assuming they are smart and they remove Rondo from the rotation, and that's without even Andre Iguodala coming over in the buyout market, which I think likely will happen. And then he'll be a ninth guy in your rotation. The question is Kuzma. Is he going to, A, mature? Because that's a real thing. Kyle Kuzma, you can't have your trainer out here saying the best player in the world doesn't work hard enough at his game, and then you seemingly co-sign it on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Like, if you want to be a goofball when it comes to your hair, fine. But when it comes to real professional adult basketball, you need to grow up a bit. You also need to grow up a bit on the court. Too often this year, the Lakers are in a two-on-one break, but Kuzma hasn't gotten his touches. So instead of making the right basketball play, he goes himself, and it doesn't work out well. That irritates veteran teams. That irritates teams that understand we have a bigger goal in mind. In Kuzma's defense, he's the one guy on the team that hadn't been paid, other than Caruso, of course. But, like, it's tough to ask a guy who's trying to prove himself in this league, trying to get a next contract, to be selfless. That's why championship teams very often don't rely on young players. If they are going to make a trade, it will be Kuzma. He's the only tradable asset they have. Could they use another shooter? Sure, the whole league could. Could they use maybe a ball handler to replace Rondo? Absolutely. But if they make no moves, they're the best team in the Western Conference, and the only team I believe that can throw a scare into them is the Milwaukee Bucks, who might be the best team we've seen in this league since the Warriors, well, other than the Warriors, in a very long time. Mm-hmm. And so I think LeBron's right that they don't need to make a move. I also think the next couple weeks are critical for Kyle Kuzma in which direction he wants to go. You want to be a featured guy on a bad team and get a bunch of buckets? Or do you want to be a part of potentially winning a championship in year three, which will lead to the financial rewards he wants so badly?
I would want the second one. I thought that was a much better option.
Well, I don't know that that's what he wants.
Back here, first things first, we're now joined by former All-Pro running back Brian Westbrook.
What up, man?
Good morning,
Brian.
Brody.
How's it going?
Get that ring out of
Come
here.
Come on, be done. What you mean?
He always wants to dap up with the ring hand.
No, I always dap up with the right hand. Yeah, okay. If I give you the left,
that's my point.
If I give you the left, I know you
that
ain't
is,
right.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying?
I don't know what we're talking about.
Well, he's right. You can't shake someone's hand with your left hand.
Oh, I think, I mean, he would, like, hit, you'd punch him.
No, you
no,
I already said I didn't know. I shouldn't need to follow it up. I don't know. I didn't. Let's talk some football. That I do know. Super Bowl 54 gearing up to be a barn burner. Our friends over at Fox Bet have the Chiefs as 1.5-point favorites over the Niners. It's about as close as it gets for a Super Bowl matchup. All right, Nick, what's the biggest factor that you think will determine the outcome in this?
Oh, to me, this is going to be a great game, but it's a relatively simple game to analyze. There's one factor on each side of the ball that's going to determine it. When the 49ers have the ball, how dominant will that run game be? It's not going to be as dominant as it was against Green Bay. That was historically dominant. But even with this new and improved Chiefs defense, even with the defense that was, over the final third of the season, number one scoring defense, number one red zone defense, all these things, where they have been most improved is against the pass. They still are susceptible to teams running down their throat. What the Titans got out of that earlier than they probably should have, they were having success in it in the first half of that football game. So how dominant will the Niners' rushing attack be? And then on the flip side of the ball, will the Chiefs' offensive line give Patrick Mahomes time to throw? If they do, then I don't think the Chiefs can lose. If Patrick Mahomes has a clean pocket, because there are no good answers to the questions the Chiefs offense presents, in the first playoff game, the answer that the Texans came up with is double Tyreek Hill. That led to Travis Kelce having one of the greatest games the Titans ever had in the playoffs, and he did almost all of it in just a quarter of football. The Titans' answer was double Tyreek Hill and double Travis Kelce. The response to that was, hey, remember Sammy Watkins from week one of the season and from Clemson? And from he's still on the team. He will have the biggest game he had since week one, score his first touchdown of the season since week one, and have the play that iced the game. And, oh, yeah, by the way, Patrick Mahomes will lead us in rushing. Because if you're going to double two guys, you're not going to be able to keep the quarterback that mobile in the pocket. So the only actual answer is, make it to where he can't go to his third option, Sammy Watkins. Make sure he can't read the full defense. Those are the two things that will determine this football game. I don't expect, Brian, the Chiefs to all of a sudden start turning the ball over. I don't expect, Brian, the Niners to all of a sudden be like, you know what, Jimmy Garoppolo, this is your moment. We're going to ask you to throw the ball 40 times. I think we know what each team wants to do, and the question is, which defense is most successful in preventing?
Yeah, we do know. We know exactly what the Kansas City Chiefs want to do, throw the football, and the 49ers, they want to run the ball. And that's why for the Kansas City Chiefs, the most important part is the offensive line. It really is going to dictate on both sides of the ball offensively what's going to happen. And so when you look at the Chiefs, they've only given up 3 sacks and 70 pass attempts in the postseason, which is phenomenal. And of course, the 49ers, they attack the quarterback. They've had 9 sacks in their 2 games in the postseason. And so this is why it's so important. If the Chiefs can protect their quarterback, that means they're going to score points. We know that. If the Kansas City Chiefs are able to score points, that's going to kind of take the 49ers out of that run game, that dominant run game. And if you're Kyle Shanahan, the one thing you don't want it to turn into is a quarterback competition. Mm-hmm. You want to say, Jimmy Garoppolo versus Patrick Mahomes. You want to say, hey, we still want to be able to run the football, keep the Kansas City Chiefs defense off balance, and make them think that we can at least run it so that we can get that play action pass, those types of things. But if Kansas City is able to protect Patrick Mahomes, that means that secondary of the 49ers is not as effective. That means that linebacker core probably doesn't come into play. And that means Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs will probably be Super Bowl champions.
No, you're absolutely right. That Chiefs offense is explosive. It's not a matter of if, it's only a matter of when. All you got to do is go back and look at the AFC Championship game last year where they were blanked in the first half and scored 31 in the second half. So we know that this offense can score in bunches. That's why, for me, the key to this game is turnovers. If you're the 49ers, being able to get off the field by being able to turn the football over, whether that's strip sacks, whether that's interceptions, after you disrupting the timing of the passing game by hitting the quarterback and pressing the receivers, whatever you can do to get off the field, that's what you have to do. You have to try to steal as many possessions as you can for your offense to allow your offense to play to its strengths, which is running the football and not asking Jimmy G to be a volume passer. So for the 49ers, I think they have to protect the football and they got to try to create some turnovers. If you're the Chiefs and you're that defense, if you can get Jimmy G to turn the football over, you know your offense can put points on the board. And if you can get up on the 49ers by double digits, then that's going to make Kyle Shanahan go away from the running game and force Jimmy G to win the football game. I think that's when the Chiefs would have the advantage.
And tell me what you guys think of this. I do think the Chiefs offense has one particular facet to it that could keep the Niners pass rush off balance, because I think we all agree the Niners' biggest strength is where they've spent all their draft picks, where they have their best players, which is that defensive front. And the Chiefs haven't used it that much this postseason, but we've seen it a ton since Andy Reid's been the play caller there, which is the wide receiver pre-snap motions that end up in end-arounds, the screen game to Damian Williams, or the wide receiver screen, those things that can make those edge rushers take an extra beat, wait, where am I supposed to go here? I think they are more equipped to really take advantage of those types of things than the typical high-scoring offense, because we've seen them do it year after year, even before Patrick was there. It was a staple of the Andy Reid, Alex Smith offense. It was a staple of their offense last season. They haven't used it quite as much this season, but I still think it's there for the taking if they want it.
Well, the Chiefs have that ability on the offensive side of the ball, but the one thing I will say is with the 49ers defensive line, especially those ends, they do a great job of setting the edge, not just in the pass rush, but also in the run game. You saw saw that against the Minnesota Vikings. They were able to set a hard edge, whether it was perimeter runs or Kirk Cousins trying to get out on boots. Same thing with Aaron Rodgers and Aaron Jones in the NFC Championship game. So I think that Nicky Bosa does that at a high level. And, of course, D Ford and Solomon Thomas, those guys can do a great job of being able to set the edge. So I would say that that would be a counter in order to slow down those edge rushers. But I just think that the 49ers are so fundamentally sound, especially those guys on the defensive line, it's going to be hard for that Chiefs offense to outflank those ends.
The one way that you get fundamentally sound defenses, and you're absolutely right about the 49ers, the one way that you kind of get them out of place and you take advantage of them is to make them think. Make them think and say, hey, maybe this is something new, something that I haven't seen. And so in these 2 weeks that you have between the championship games and the Super Bowl, Andy Reid has to come up with something that says, you know what, this front four, we have to make sure that they're saying, hey, I'm getting blocked from a different angle. Maybe I'm going to wham. I'm going to do different types of things so that you can't allow them to pin their ears back and get after the quarterback. And here's the other part. The 49ers defense, I don't think enough has been said about their linebacker core. They have fast-flowing linebackers that can tackle. And so on every level, the defensive line, linebackers and secondary, they have very good players. And it's just hard to beat teams that have very good players on all three levels of a defense.
All right, let's move on to the Clippers. So when they added reigning finals MVP Kawhi Leonard and six-time All-Star Paul George this offseason, remember the conversation was how many titles could the Clippers win now? But in a year engulfed in load management, the conversation has quickly shifted. Reports are that some Clippers players are upset with the preferential treatment of Kawhi and PG-13. Nick, anything to this?
Who could have seen this coming? I mean, who in the world could have seen that you had a Clippers team that was totally together, that took the Warriors, the healthy Warriors, by the way, before any of the injuries got them, went to six games, and were building something, and then remade the entire team in an offseason, that if things didn't go as swimmingly well as most people predicted, there could be a little angst about it, particularly when you have your superstars, who always play by a slightly different set of rules, playing by a totally different set of rules than the rest of the team. And I don't think they're so much upset that Paul George, he had double shoulder surgery and then hurt his hamstring. Like, that is how it works in the league if you're dealing with an injury in any league. I think there's probably some players a little, and could Kawhi have played, you know, a back-to-back, two back-to-backs? But what they're really upset with is this team is not as good as everyone said they were going to be. They're outside of the top five on offense. They're outside of the top five on defense. And I'm old enough to remember this Clippers team was going to be the best defense in basketball by a mile. They're on pace for 56 wins, which is good, but it ain't great. They are looking up in the standings and have been all year to the actual best team out west, the Los Angeles Lakers. And they've got the same number of losses as the Raptors, Celtics, and Nuggets. They have more losses than the Jazz and the Heat. That was not the plan here. So it's one thing we're going to load manage like Toronto did with Kawhi, right? They were 17-5 in the 22 games Kawhi missed last year, so it did not hurt them. They actually had a tick better winning percentage in the regular season in the games he sat than the games he played. That has not been the case for the Clippers. And so I don't blame if some of the players have some of the concerns I do, which is, yeah, this is all about winning a championship, but what if this process makes it harder for us to win a championship because we have a brutal round one matchup and we're on the road in round two of the postseason? I think that's where some of this is coming from, Canty.
Well, you're probably right, but here's the thing. I mean, all is not lost. You brought up in the offensive and defensive metrics. We knew it was going to take some time for this Clippers team to come around and to find their footing just because Kawhi was going to be in and out of the lineup with load management, and Paul George is coming off of offseason surgery. So, I mean, the core for the Toronto Raptors had been together for years before they introduced Kawhi Leonard, so you could understand why they'd be able to function a little bit better without him. They shipped off a lot of pieces from that Clippers team when they made the deal to bring over Paul George. So, I mean, there are some moving parts with this, and guys are getting adjusted to playing with one another. But I do think they're positioning themselves the best that they can in order to compete for a championship because they recognize what Kawhi Leonard was able to do down the stretch of the regular season, but more importantly in the postseason, knowing that you were managing the amount of minutes and the amount of game played in the regular season. So I think this is Doc Rivers taking a big picture view of this thing. The role players from the Clippers, they just got to understand what this is. I mean, star players have always gotten preferential treatments in sports, not just basketball, but in sports in general. I remember Jimmy Johnson, the head coach for the Dallas Cowboys, said, "I'll treat all the players fairly. I'm not going to treat everybody the same." I mean, as a defensive tackle, I knew that there were different rules for me in comparison to the quarterbacks that I played with. Why? Because a quarterback is more important to the team's success than the defensive tackle is. The same way that Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are more important to the Clippers' success than any of those other role players. So I understand where those other guys from the Clippers are coming from, but they also, I got to understand, there's a bigger picture to this thing. And if you trust Doc Rivers and you trust the people in the Clippers' front office, then you got to trust how they handle this situation with Kawhi and PG-13.
Is this fixable? Because he's going to continue to be load managed. Yeah, so that's not going to change. So this is the way it's going to be.
The solution for the Clippers is what they have cornered themselves in this place where it is, you can say it's always championship or bust, but anything short of a title, and this whole year is an abject failure for them because they have said, without saying it, but through their actions, we don't care about the regular season. It is all focused on the fact we think this puts us in the best position to win a championship. So if you're a Clippers fan and you're being told the first 82 games don't matter because it's the last 20 to 25 that all that we care about, if instead of getting to 20 to 25 in games in the postseason in a ring, you get 12 and a second round exit, then it is worse than the typical disappointing second round exit. We got nothing out of this. And by the way, after this year, Kawhi and Paul George got one more year left on each of their contracts guaranteed. Then they can do whatever they want. And you mentioned Doc Rivers. And one other point on Doc, and I know everybody likes Doc, and he used to be in the media, and he seems like a really good guy, all these things. It should be noted, Doc Rivers has coached some really good teams. In the 2010, since 2010, he's been in the conference finals once. He's coached 11 playoff series in his career without Kevin Garnett on his team. They're 2-9, his teams, in those 11 playoff series. So is Doc going to Ubuntu his way to fixing this like he did with the Celtics? I don't know. And I know that superstars get preferential treatment. I do think there are players on the Clippers saying, why are our superstars treated not so much differently than us, but so much differently than Giannis, than James Harden, than LeBron James, than Anthony Davis? It's not that the Clippers are treating their superstars like all superstars get treated. They're treating their superstar, because it's not Paul George. He has a surgery and then an injury. Kawhi Leonard is in a box by himself this NBA season, and the only way to unwrap it and come out of it a winner is to win the whole damn thing. I wish him luck. I don't think they're going to be able to do it, and I think it's going to recalibrate the whole league's approach to load management. When the two teams who have taken the regular season seriously, the Bucks and the Lakers, end up with coasts in the first round, the Bucks maybe the whole Eastern Conference playoffs, and they end up being rested for the NBA Finals when they meet each other, and these other teams like, oh, maybe the regular season does matter a little bit more than we were led to believe.
Maybe Nick was right.
We'll see.
I watched that show.
We'll see.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.